'Tis Wednesday.
March
3rd, 2021. It's my wife Amy's birthday today.
Yeah. So, happy birthday to Amy.
You know, we're almost the same age. Like, I'm January 9th, she's March 3rd. So there's, like, almost 2 months where I'm her elder. But she always catches up right away. So those 2 months.
Yeah, I got the same thing with Deborah. It's 3 months. I got 3 months on her. Yeah.
They both married older men.
Right.
So just to introduce ourselves and dive in. I'm Mark Fanstienwick. I direct the Center for Prophetic Imagination.
Yeah, I'm Daniel Wolpert. I direct MICA, the Minnesota Institute of Contemplation and Healing. And we're kind of in week two of our new format. Having a theme, not doing it every day. Our numbers are shrinking dramatically. We may have totally killed the program by doing this.
Well, I mean, it's this thing, like, things are going to slowly go back to the normal. And then also, like, you know, 5 days a week is a lot. So we'll see. It also doesn't help. Talking about pandemic, I know, is not everyone's favorite topic, but it's important to kind of.
Especially because it's over.
Yeah, because we don't have a pandemic anymore.
Yeah, it's gone.
Joe Biden single-handedly destroyed it like St. George with the dragon.
Oh, but you know what? I think we need to talk about Bubo's wine, right? Mm-hmm.
I discovered that there is a red wine called Bubo with an owl on it, and I thought, you know, if we ever have a celebration where Dan and I are in the same place, especially doing this show,
yes,
we can maybe drink a bunch of Bubo as part of that celebration.
That just sounds like some kind of terrible cult suicide activity.
Drink the Bubo. Delicious.
Oh my gosh. Wait, so this can't be true.
The U.S. bishops have told Catholics not to get the Johnson & Johnson vaccine. I guess they think that dying and killing people is better. That's because it uses fetal cells.
Oh, my God.
But the thing is the Pope said it's okay, which is astonishing. And, you know, yeah, the U.S. bishops are always, like, so regressive.
You know, they're secretly trying to overthrow the Pope.
Yeah, that wouldn't surprise me.
No. Yeah.
You know, it's funny. When the Vatican looks progressive compared to you, you know you're not doing something right.
Right, yeah. And then Lisa's got the comment about Texas.
Yeah, Texas is opening
up. I mean, I just made a comment about this morning. You know, they didn't kill everybody with getting rid of power and water. So I guess they figure they need COVID variants to come in. This is like the third wave, you know, first the power, no power, then no water, then COVID variants. And they're just like, yeah, just whatever it takes, right? But look, these are their leaders. They keep getting reelected, so... Mm-hmm. What the, you know, I don't know. So the endemic pandemic, and so what we're talking about this week is just this reality of COVID becoming more endemic in our world, in our society. You know, you look at what's going on with Brazil, right? Mm-hmm. And you're just getting this wave after wave of variants coming through these different places. And one of the things I was thinking about was just the issue of ecological awareness and whether or not we're developing any. You know, we've talked off and on about how the pandemic might be a vehicle for us to understand the reality of our ecological interconnection, our relationship or lack thereof with the rest of the natural world. But, you know, I saw this, what got me thinking about this was I saw this article the other day about, you know, so China and India share a border in the Himalayas. And, you know, it's a border that has been under dispute for a long, long time, mostly because, you know, it goes through the Himalayan mountains, and it's probably hard to even find a border up there, you know, which part of the glacier are you on, and et cetera. So there are all these Indian troops up there and Chinese troops up there, and they're constantly having these little skirmishes, and they just had some pretty bad ones a little while back. And so perhaps in retaliation for this, you know, China put all of this malware on the Indian electric grid. And there was just this outage in Mumbai that was maybe attributed to China. And, you know, it just got me thinking about how we've not really gotten it yet that we all live on this one planet together. Like the old human model of, you know, let's have enemies, let's fight each other, let's kill the other tribe, let's take each other over. You know, on a tiny, crowded, interconnected planet, is just not going to work anymore. And I think this pandemic is a perfect example of this. And you know, to wipe out one country and then create this wave of refugees, right? Where are they going to go? They're just going to go somewhere else on the planet, disrupt that area. You know, it just doesn't make sense anymore. And yet we seem to have not figured that out really in any way, shape, or form.
Well, and that's the show.
Yeah, you were really
Well,
kind of spacing out there. Sorry
it's just
about
depressing, like thinking about all this. And you
it.
know, it's part of the problem is, you know, it's this old challenge of our technological capacities always steps ahead of our moral and imaginative capacities. So, you know, you have Europeans conquering the world largely because of technological advancements, even though morally and intellectually we were probably less advanced than a lot of the people we were conquering. And so that kind of similar sort of posture towards the world continues on. So we're able to screw ourselves over way more effectively than we are to able to discern the consequences of our actions. And that's a bummer. That's just a bummer.
Well, and you know, and then I heard this radio show the other day when we were driving. I don't even remember the start of it. I jumped in on the middle. It was something about funding for education. And, you know, the host says, "Well, I'm getting all these comments on our Facebook page. You know, why should I pay for other people's kids to get educated?" Right? Like, as if, well, gee, you know, if you need somebody to take care of you, or you need somebody to like put electricity in your house, or you need somebody to work on your internet, like, wouldn't you want an educated population? Like, you're going to need those people when they grow up to help you. And so, you know, we've got these two trends of, on the one hand, I think you do have a number of people that are becoming more and more aware of our interconnection, the need for interconnection, the need for acknowledging our mutual interdependence. But then you also have this whole group of people that are just becoming more and more atomized
That's right.
and are sort of wanting less and less to do with anybody else, right? And, you know, and I think this all, you know, the way that people have engaged the pandemic, we really see that getting played out.
Got some comments coming in here. More about the bishops. U.S. bishops are Trumpists. Sorry, sorry. It's U.S. bishops are going against what the rest of the world. In horrible ways. I wish they actually were going against something that was worth fighting for. That'd be nice. I feel like the rest of the world is forced to sink with the US against their will. That's right. Like, we still have disproportionate power over how everyone else in the world gets to suffer. That's kind of, and I think those days are changing, but it's still like these ideas that certain powerful super nations can determine the fates of people around the world is problematic.
Yeah. Well, and one example of that was, there was just somebody, was it a general? Somebody was like, oh, yeah, we should be preparing for nuclear war with China in the next couple decades, right? Like over the South China Sea or Taiwan or whatever. And I mean, it really is flabbergasting to me that anybody still talks that way, right? I mean, it really is. It's just like, what do we think is going to happen? What do we think is going to happen? Like, I'm going to dodge the fallout that's blowing across the Pacific Ocean, or, gee, when, 100 million people from Taiwan try to come to the United States or to Southeast Asia or whatever, like, we're just going to let them in. I mean, we can't deal with, 300 kids that we've got in concentration camps, or the 3,000 or whatever it is. We're going to destabilize Southeast Asia and have hundreds of millions of people on the move. Like, is that really a good idea? I mean, it's almost sort of laughable in a way if it wasn't so,
I mean, and this ties in with what we were talking about before about formation, and also about, you've talked about big numbers. Like, it's so abstract to talk that way to begin with, but then it's just normal to talk about comments like that from a general don't even make the news, really. And it's funny, there are still priests and nuns who get arrested for breaking into nuclear installations. And, in activist circles, it's almost like, well, who cares about nuclear weapons anymore? And so part of it's because, part of it maybe is a good thing we don't worry about it so much, but then it's also like we're just used to nuclear weapons just being around. If you watch television or read stuff that was written 50s or 60s, the nuclear peril is like writ large, and people are like imagining, are we going to have gigantic mutant ants? Like they're flabbergasted by the possibilities of the ways we could destroy ourselves. And then by the 70s, it's like, yeah, but it's just nuclear weapons. And now today, it's like, oh, we still have those. When the
And
general, and this is
we're
all because we've
making
been,
new ones.
we're making new ones, and it's because we're formed into, this is normal. Like the idea of these gigantic, massive destructive things, like, and even our science fiction doesn't talk about nuclear weapons anymore like it used to.
No.
Like aliens come to the planet, like they have harnessed the power of the atom. We must stop humanity before it destroys all of the galaxy. Like we don't talk that way anymore.
No.
Anthony's also saying happy birthday, Amy. Kathleen writes, my district superintendent said that since I got the vaccine last week, I should go back to full church services. From what I see, I'm not fully protected for another few weeks, even if you ignore the variants. Missouri is finally giving vaccines to persons in Kansas City. The rural areas were served first.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Yeah, your district superintendent doesn't understand the science of vaccinations. Oh gosh.
Sarah's writes, humanity is really too traumatized. We have to really unfreeze the eons of collective trauma in our bodies. Yeah, we got a lot of stuff to work through, and it's hard when we can't even talk about history honestly. But yeah, a lot of trauma continuing. Mark Tibbles writes, the dominant narrative in capitalist nations of personal responsibility and self-advancement at the expense of all else is a powerful siren song to keep folks from recognizing the interconnectedness of all human and other life on the planet. This when we start talking about interconnectedness in the United States, I always think about these funny stories to me about the military. Like, we need to create good killers, so let's give them acid and mushrooms and see what happens. And they find out, like, if you take hallucinogenics like that, one of the common experiences is like, I am one with everything. Look at my hands. That's the experience. And so then all these soldiers are like, I don't know if I want to kill anymore. Now,
Yeah.
it's funny to think about, but realize that the core insight of that experience isn't like, wow, my hands still move, like I see the trails of my hands. It's I feel interconnected in a way I never did before. Now I
Yeah.
don't want to kill. And
Yeah.
that just that little shift, I want to see more of that without having to give everyone mushrooms and
Yeah.
drugs. David
Yeah, I mean,
writes, oh, go ahead.
I just wanted to say something. I mean, the notion that personal responsibility is antithetical to interconnectedness, I find to just be absolutely fascinating. I mean, you're right, Mark. That is, those two are played off against each other. Right? I mean, I don't know if anybody saw during the power outage, the one mayor in this little Colorado town was like, "I'm sick of people asking for stuff with the government. If they can't figure out how to make their own electricity, then to hell with them." I mean,
What?
the guy actually said this. Yeah, like if you don't have power, you should just go out and figure out how to make your own electricity.
I don't want people going around making their own electricity. It's terrifying.
To me, my sense of understanding personal responsibility is that we actually then embrace fully our interconnectedness. Like my responsibility is both to myself and to everybody else. Like that's the highest order of personal responsibility. And yet somehow, as you said, in capitalism and colonialism and all of this, there is a sense that personal responsibility means I'm connected to nobody else.
Yeah, it's bizarre.
Yeah.
Like, I'm extremely collectivist minded, as much as, I have to work against my programming all the time and try to think in systems, but that doesn't make me somehow less personally responsible. It makes me more, because all of a sudden I realize, oh, I see all the ways, or more of the ways, that my actions have consequences in the world because I'm part of a system.
Yeah.
It's just, yeah, you're right, Dan. It's like, it's illogical to pit those against each other. And the
Yeah.
reason we do is because there's of an atomized assumption about what responsibility is. I'm responsible for myself, therefore you're responsible for yourself. You take care of yourself, I'll take care of myself. It's messed
And
up.
ourselves have like no interaction. I mean that's the other, even though we're literally exchanging atoms and relying on ourselves, on each other for all kinds of things.
Well, and then in every other area of like economics, politics, as though those could even be
Everything.
separated to begin with. David writes, "Am I remembering this correctly? Didn't the Attorney General of Texas file suit against Pennsylvania saying their change in mail-in ballots were an infringement on Texas rights? Wondering about the governor's disregard for public health and other states' rights to sue him."
Yeah, that was one of the more bizarre election suits. The fact that Pennsylvania had mail-in ballots somehow made Texas votes less, I don't know what. It was a stupid suit. It got thrown out right away, but it was a fascinating twist of all of this.
Gus writes, "My favorite sci-fi writer, Cory Doctorow, loves to talk about how, quote, we have a shared microbial destiny, end quote. His retelling of the Mask of the Red Death from a couple of years ago feels super prescient during this pandemic."
Yeah, and of course, what's one of the things that's really fascinating, right, about even that, and I don't know if I ever mentioned this on transmission, but I know I've talked about it in other places. The fact that we now bury people in these hermetically sealed caskets so that they cannot decompose, is kind of a fascinating little image of all of this, right? That we even deny our shared microbial destiny. Right? And I want to be in the earth, in formaldehyde, in my own little room, completely separate from the rest of ecology forever, which is also really strange.
Series writes, "Holy shit, Many Asian nations would not support the nuclear wars. American leaders are so bananas. Orientalism and xenophobia is shit. Well said.
Well said.
And this is the thing, like, you know, every president in my lifetime has talked about China as some sort of, like, menace. And I'm not, I don't love China. Like, I have all sorts of critiques. You know, I'm not a big fan of, like, these different approaches to Marxist governments because I feel like they end up being too dominating. But it's funny when the United States is, like, worried about China or India becoming some sort of great conquering nations. Like, that's not the history that we... I mean, Western powers have showed that we're the ones who have problems with this, and somehow we want to deny other people access to these things as though they're the real threats. It's bizarre to me. So even this idea that we have to prepare for a war with China, it's like, why would we have to assume that at all?
Yeah.
I mean, the trade wars are involved seem to be plenty already.
No, it's classic projection.
Yeah. Ellen writes, whenever Daniel Wolpert says, isn't it funny, I've learned to expect the rest of the sentence isn't going to be funny at all. It's true. I've read him like a book.
Sorry, Ellen.
Stefan writes, another depressing thought. Yeah, we need more of those. That conservatives go against the moderates, often forget. We don't live in a just universe. Like diseases, disasters, poverty, etc., they're against God's will, not part of grand plan, and are not okay. Natural, exceptional, something which has a higher purpose. I'm not sure if you're saying that these things are against God's will, or maybe you can unpack it a little bit, because I'm not sure exactly how the dots connect.
Missed the thread.
Joyce writes, the first horror movie I ever watched was about giant nuked ants that ate people.
Nice. Yeah, there were a lot of those.
Yeah, they don't age very well, those movies. Gus writes, Dan, isn't it funny? All the state of Ohio has just been sucked into a mini black hole, LOL. That'd be an example.
Right. Yeah.
Didn't they create... They just created a little black hole or a highly sophisticated simulation in the lab, didn't they? That wasn't Ohio.
No, that was the giant collider in Europe. And
yeah, so if they had one in Ohio...
Yeah, one might think that creating black holes was not a good idea. That would be an example of saying, isn't it funny? We just made a black hole and sucked ourselves into it. And that wouldn't be funny. All right.
Karen writes, these rich folk romanticize survivalism, rugged individualism. They are the opposite of Nomadland.
Nomadland is a great movie. I think it could have been better, but it's very, very good in a lot of ways. And one of the things I kept thinking about, of course, during that was, so, you know, this is a woman that ends up on the road, kind of basically without a home, you know, not homeless, but without a home. And, you know, encountering all these people who are nomads in America. But then I was also thinking, okay, so there's that group of people who are basically sort of the lower class nomads. You also have an equivalent group of folks who are on the road who are nomads, but who are in these massive, self-contained, incredibly sophisticated vehicles. And I was looking at these online because we saw one of them in one of our road trips this summer. And so I was looking these things up. And these things, there's one line of them that start at $500,000 is the cheapest one. And it's basically this kind of armored vehicle truck thing. I mean, it's just crazy. And so even within that world, right, you have like the one percenters and then everybody else who are kind of living in this Mad Max sort of reality. It's this fascinating, disconnected sort of society. Mm-hmm.
Lisa writes, people don't even know how to interact with their own selves anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well,
That's what
and
happens
I
when
don't
you're
know.
alienated with other people. You're going to have self-alienation at different levels. Those things are definitely connected.
And again, I'm not sure if it's sort of any more. I mean, I think that, this is what spiritual teachers have been talking about forever, right? Is that it really starts, all of these problems really start with this basic disconnection with ourselves, with our own minds. We don't know how to interact with our own thoughts, our own feelings. The series was saying, trauma takes us out of our body, takes us away from thoughts and feelings that are too overwhelming, very painful. And so we have a hard time interacting with ourselves. We then project that out onto others. The difficult aspects of who we are. And so then, right, you create this kind of human ecology where all of this projection is just bouncing around and kind of amplifying the pain and the lack of connection and alienation. And as you have more and more people on the planet, that's happening to a greater and greater degree. And so, this is where spiritual teachers have talked about that we need to be able to engage ourselves and others from a very different point of view. And that's essential.
Catherine writes, most people in the United States ignore nuclear danger these days, but I also think that immense fear is very close to the surface of our collective subconscious and continuing to drive the military-industrial complex. Telling a stranger you're for nuclear disarmament tends to provoke intense reactions. I think that's true. Like, I think once you, it's just, it's under the surface, but it's still there. And it's part of the fear soup.
Well, and clearly, if we look at all of our interactions with Iran and less so with North Korea, but with Iran over the last couple of decades, I mean, that's all been driven by exactly what you're talking about, Catherine. And who has nuclear weapons, right? Who has the right to have that level of power? Big, big issue. All right, so Stefan is clarifying for us.
I'm saying they, diseases, disasters, poverty, are against God's will. Usually people will become complacent and accept bad things by saying or implying it's a part of God's plan somehow. Whereas in my opinion, one
My
of the core
opinion.
messages of Jesus was no, God is not like that. We should be against anything bad, even a fig being barren out of its season. I'm not sure what to, I mean, once you start talking about God's will, it gets hard to even know what we're talking about anymore in general because of like the ways in which the idea of God's volition plays out. So like if in one way, if anything happens at all, someone would say, oh, that's God's will because they mean because God is entirely in control. I don't have a view of God that sees God in entire control. So then the idea of God's will, like if what you're saying that, and I could track with this, things that are bad that are going to harm people, we should not like those things and not somehow say, well, we have to accept things that harm us and harm humanity because somehow it's in God's plan. I agree with that generally. But theologically, it gets harder to know how to talk about God's will when it comes to things like disasters and diseases. Because I also don't like the idea of humanity trying to take the role of God and wipe out everything that could be a harm to us because there's consequences to those actions. That's my general thoughts.
And if one understands that in ecological systems, they are set up to have periods of equilibrium and disequilibrium. And again, is an ecological system God's will? Well, I mean, in some ways, yeah, you could talk about it that way. And so, periods of disequilibrium, especially those that are created by our actions. The results of that may be very negative and difficult. Is that God's will in the sense that, yeah, you've got this psychotic guy up there, you know, sending plagues because we've been naughty. No, I don't ascribe to that image of God. Are we getting this plague because we are creating massive disequilibrium in our world? Well, yeah, I would say that we are. Now, is that God's will because God created ecological systems? Well, I mean, in some sense, yes. But yeah, no, I, you know, what you're saying, Mark, I mean, it's a very, very difficult topic. Maybe that should be one of our topics, maybe for a week.
I'm having flashbacks to a couple decades worth of Arminianism versus Calvinism arguments among evangelical circles, which no one else really talks about that stuff that much. Because
it's like nuclear weapons.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, because to me, having a healthy dose of mystery is important when it comes to the idea of will. And then just plus the idea of will in the Western philosophical system is overplayed. Yeah. Because, like, the things that happen in my life aren't all the consequences of my actions. No. Not really. There's, because it's a dynamic feedback loop. And then my actions, the things that I do and think, aren't just one will anyways. An individual doesn't have one will. That's like a weird concept that somehow we're rational choosers. It's all A or B. We have competing. So, like, once you start then projecting that complexity towards the complexity of talking about God, it's like, what is a will? And how does that apply to God? And is God somehow holding all of existence and God's imagination? And is God constituting everything that is by the act of will? Like, it gets bizarre. So, yeah, we could talk about it, but I might start convulsing.
Isn't it funny when we talk about God's will?
Funny?
Like, no, it's not.
Speaking of which, Carol says, our sense of humor has taken a big hit downward. And this is an example of that. Susan writes, most pop theology will fuck with your head big time. Not healthy.
Not healthy.
You're right. It's like okay. McDonald's of theology.
Well, that's probably a good note to end on right there. Yeah. Isn't it funny?
Isn't it funny?
When you talk about pop theology. Oh.
Speaking of theology, I think our plan was next week is to talk about why are we Christians? Is that right?
Yes. Yeah.
Because it's kind of one of those things, like, people are sometimes surprised, like, you're a Christian.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. Why are you a Christian? You seem radical or progressive. Well, and so we're going to talk about, like, Dan and I don't have the same reasons, but I'm sure there's overlap, but we're going to talk about why we're part of this Christianity thing. Yeah. Why we haven't just walked
and
away
just
from
to show how unoriginal that is, Howard Thurman had a sermon and series of lectures entitled that about 70 years ago.
Yeah, and there's a book I think called by Hans Kung, the Catholic theologian, Why Am I a Christian? So I think you know, I feel like every age that where the Christianity has been called into question, there's been some thinker who you'd think would be against Christianity saying, no, actually, I'm a part of this thing, and they have to write a book about it. So we're going to be a part of that.
Sitting in a room, rocking in a fetal position, going, why am I doing this?
Why? So that'll be next week, and I think we might actually get in 3 episodes next week, so it'll be a full, fun week.
We might. We'll see. All right. Great to hear from you all. Great to be with you. I love you guys.
See you next week.
Yeah, Monday.